I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to Almost Famous, the podcast where I explore the subject of fame by talking to people who've experienced it themselves and ask them how it has affected their own journey as well as the lives of those around them. My guest today is the UK's most prolific voiceover artist and is arguably best known for being the voice of Britain's Got Talent and The X Factor. It's Peter Dixon. It would probably be easier to give a list of the television shows Peter hasn't worked on, but here are some of the classics that he has voiced over the course of a 42, yes, 42-year career. You will have heard and sometimes even seen Peter on Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaway, The Last Leg, Pointless, This Morning, Catchphrase, Harry Enfield and Chums, They Think It's All Over, The Paul O'Grady Show, All Star Mr. and Mrs., Live at the Apollo, Stars in Their Eyes, Loose Women, Comic Relief, Sport Relief, and many, many more. Peter also holds the unique distinction of having been the youngest ever BBC News presenter at the age of 17, and his radio career included work as an announcer on Radio 2 and performing many of the characters on The Steve Wright Show on Radio 1. So it's a great honour to give a huge, almost famous welcome to Peter Dixon. How are you, Peter?
Just listening to that, I feel quite exhausted, actually, Barnaby, because that's, as you rightly say, it's a 43-year career now. But, I mean, that's going back to when I first started. I first started in the business when I was 18. So, you know, it's been a long, long time. And, but, boy, goodness me, I've had fun. And reading those credits as you, well, some of the credits, it's not all of them by any means, but it just reminds me how much I've done, how many shows I've worked on, and what fun I've had.
Yeah, amazing. I went through your website, amazing list of over 100 shows I could have gone from. I always ask my guests, you've already picked me up on one mistake, 43, not 42, but what did I miss anything out on your intro that you're like, oh, he should have included that? Some people can get a little prickly about the things you mess up, and that's mainly when I read off their Wikipedia. So I think having gone from your actual website, I might have done okay.
Yeah, you've done a great job. I mean, we'll be here all day. I would just if anybody is vaguely interested, you know, look at my website or go to my IMDb page. You'll see everything, more or less everything I've done. But I mean, in sort of general terms, I think it's, you know, it's quite a lot. I tried to sort of tot it up the other day, Barnaby, and I think it's something like over 100 broadcast TV shows and series. I've been a promo voice. That's the kind of voice that does the promos on about 60 TV channels over those years. I've featured on something like 30-plus, I think, AAA game titles. That's video game titles. Yep. And in radio commercials, I've done so many of those. I almost lost count, but I think somewhere around 30,000 radio and TV commercials over that 43 years. And that's not including all the live events that I do as well. It's one of the great things about my work is that no 2 days are ever the same. So I never know from one day to the next what I'm going to be doing, because I work across all the sectors in entertainment.
Yeah, a very busy man. That just makes me want to thank you again for coming on. But first and foremost, we'll get into a little bit more into the specifics of those different kind of bits of work that you do. I'm really fascinated by all of that. But let's talk a little bit about the book that you've got coming out, Peter. Tell our audience when they can see that. What are they going to get to read?
Well, it's a memoir. It's not an autobiography. It doesn't touch at all on my personal life, although some of it does impinge on my working life. But I thought, I mean, my friends for many years have said to me, I should write the story of my professional working life down, because there are so many stories, so many anecdotes, so many funny tales, so many sad stories as well, that I thought, yeah, I should write it down. And I've been meaning to do it for years, but never really got round to it because I was just too busy. So in the last 3 years, three years ago, I started writing it. And during lockdown, I finished writing it. And I've just sent it off recently to be published. So in, what are we now? We are on the 27th of August as we're recording this. On the 14th of September, the audiobook version, which I recorded myself. Who else could I give it to?
I recorded
it myself. That was an interesting experience. I've never done an audiobook before. I'm not sure I'll be repeating the experience again soon. It's quite a marathon. There are, 320 pages or 100 and I don't know how many thousands of words I'd read, but the process is now done. That's going to be out via the website Spoken Word Audio on the 14th of September, and then on the 25th of September it will be available as an audiobook via Audible, and also as a paperback, hardback and ebook version through all the normal bookstores, outlets, and Amazon.
And I'm interested about what you just said about doing your first audiobook then, because I wonder whether, was there anything kind of new and slightly weird about having to deliver something that you've written in your own voice?
Well, because it was my work, because I'd written it, I suppose you could argue that it was slightly easier for me to read because it's me, it's my thoughts, it's written in the first person. So I think it's easier to read something you've written. That's pretty obvious. But there's also this great expectation from everybody that it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So there's a bit of pressure to make sure that, I got it right. And never having done a long form audio project like that before, I was terrified because, you record a whole chapter, it maybe takes you 2 or 3 hours. And then because, you're recording it onto a computer, you have to, well, what I did was I immediately copied the file and sent it to the cloud because I was terrified that I would lose everything, And when you create long form stuff like this, you need to save it to various locations because I don't trust technology any longer. Anything can happen in the interim, so I've made multiple copies of it on external hard drives and in the cloud. So that was interesting, and then there was the whole editing process because, as good as I am, Barnaby, we all make mistakes. And when I'm reading out loud, I frequently stumbled and breathed in the wrong places. So all that has to be edited, and I took the responsibility of doing that myself. So that took forever to do. And so the result, I think, is I'm pretty pleased with it. But like anything you do, like anything I do, I'm never 100% happy. I don't know why. It's just that pursuit of perfection that none of us ever get to.
Yes, we talked about this a lot in this podcast with a lot of our guests, that kind of feeling that as a performer, even when things go really, really well and just how you want them, the enjoyment of it is not, you can't enjoy it for nearly as long as you'd like to because you're so busy thinking about the next project or worrying about how other people are going to react. It's kind of a, to be honest, Peter, it's quite a relief to hear someone with your CV and the 30,000 commercials you've done still talk about being terrified at doing something different or wondering how it's gone, etc. It's a relief to those of us without that back catalogue.
Well, I think it's been this, that those feelings were the same on day one as they are now. And I think you could arguably say that even more so now, because one has a reputation and you're only as good as your last thing. And so as you get more experienced and more well-known, I suppose the expectation on you is greater. So you have to deliver even better stuff each time you do it. So it is... undoubtedly true that most people do feel that they've never given their best. You ask that question of any sportsman or any actor or motor racing driver, whoever is striving to do something either faster or better or creatively interesting, then I think it's always the case that you never feel you've got there. You get close to it sometimes, but you never get there fully. There's always something or some aspect about the work I've ever done I've always felt it's good enough, but it probably could be better. You know what I mean? I think it's it's something that we all have to bear, and I don't think there's anything you can do about it. I've learned to live with that. I mean, you've just got to do your best, and that's it.
So going back into your own career and how you've got to this, you know, this point of where you said, you know, it's perfect for you, and that you have, you know, you're doing what you love, but you can step out the door and nobody knows who you are. But I'm intrigued because obviously, I'm assuming you started off as a journalist, and that's how you got into being a newsreader. And was there a choice at that point in terms of being a newsreader on radio? At any point did you think, I'd like to become on television, I guess, radio to television, that kind of natural progression? Or did it just happen by chance?
Like any career, it kind of happens by happenstance or chance, as you say. Yes, you're absolutely right. I started out wanting to be a radio presenter or a DJ, or I didn't quite know what I wanted to be when I was at university. And then when I graduated, I joined the BBC as an announcer. And then...
How did you get that job?
Interesting question. When I was at university, I joined the film societies. Like, universities have these societies, don't they? And I joined this thing called the Film Society. One of the guys that helped out at the Film Society was a BBC cameraman at the BBC. And he'd produced this documentary, which he just made off his own bat using the university equipment, because, you know, he was helping us, so he was able to do that. Anyway, he said, I need somebody to narrate this. Do you know who could do this? And I said, well, I'll have a go. And I'd never narrated anything in my life before. But I was interested in acting, and I'd done acting at school and everything. So I thought, I'll have a go at this. So I narrated this documentary for him, and he said, that was actually quite good. Thank you very much. That was great. He said, they're looking for people down at the BBC to do part-time announcing work. Would you be interested in applying? I'll give you the guy's name. He gave me the guy's name. I rang him up. I went in for an interview. I did a brief audition. I was only 18 at the time. Can you imagine the brass neck walking into the BBC at 18?
Yeah. The brass neck for me to even phone the number. I'd be so scared.
Well, I mean, this is the arrogance of youth, I guess. And I ended up getting a phone call a week later saying, can you start on Monday?
Amazing.
And my mother had to drive me there. And so I started working part-time, you know, doing sort of little jobs here and there. And eventually, when I graduated, I joined the BBC full-time as an announcer. And then I thought to myself, well, journalism was quite interesting. It seemed to me a much more respectable thing than just playing records or being a voiceover or doing whatever I did.
Sure.
And so I dabbled in journalism for about 6 months. In truth, after about 3 weeks, I realized it wasn't for me. I was a terrible journalist. I would never have done anything with it. Although I worked alongside some of the best, you know, from Kate Adey to Nick Witchell, you know, all those people who came through the newsroom. And I became a sub-editor in television news, but it wasn't for me, Barnaby. You know, in your heart of heart, to be a good journalist, you have to have printer's ink in your veins. You need to really know how to ferret out a great story and mm-hmm. have an ability to tell that story. And I just didn't have it then. You know, maybe now would be different. However, as chance would have it, I then applied for another job as a Radio 2 announcer, newsreader in London, and got that job and spent 8 glorious years working on Radio 2, doing continuity announcing, news reading, presentation, and disc jockeying on Radio 2, which was most fabulous fun through the night, you know, midnight till 6 a.m. in the morning, just me and a box of records and an engineer for company and a flask of coffee and a tray of sandwiches. It was great fun. Thinking back on it now, I don't know how I did it. I would just be terrified to do that now. But again, you know, the more often you do things and the arrogance of youth, you just get on with it. I can't imagine what it sounded like, but it must have been awful. But there you go.
I don't doubt that.
From that point on, I met Steve Wright on Radio 1 because the studios were next to each other. I started doing voices for Steve Wright's show on Radio 1, character voices and telephone voices, and found I really enjoyed that. So that kind of gave me the idea that maybe here was a way of me earning a living as a character voice actor. So I then eventually left Radio 2 and went completely freelance and started doing everything that a voiceover actor does. I was doing, you know, commercials. I was doing corporate work. I was doing even telephone systems. I did, you know, and I was even the voice of the bin lorries at one point. Caution, vehicle reversing. And I'm very proud of that.
You're very good at it, Peter.
I'm very good. I'm the best bin lorry reversing voice in the world. So there you go. That's how I got into it. And from that point on, it was just a question of being a freelance, of building my business, building my client base, building trust with people, because that's what it's all about. People trust you with their projects, and you have to deliver. In fact, you have to over-deliver. I always over-deliver and under-promise all the time. I think that's very important.
I guess I'm intrigued then to know whether there was a point, I don't know, was there a point when you... Because you talked about, you know, being 18 and getting that job at the BBC because a colleague recommended you. Did you get any training at the BBC? Did you train on the job? Because having talked about Gravy for the Brain and how you're helping train other people, it seems almost like you had, I don't know, unless you tell me different, did you have the voice and you were confident that you had the right voice for this kind of work? Or was there some element of you feeling like you were blagging it when you got some training or you trained on the job? How did that work?
Well, I think there's always an element of blagging. I think even for everybody, you know, you've got to fake it to make it a lot of the time. But I think the BBC was one of the greatest training grounds I ever, for everybody, every discipline, from cameramen to sound engineers to announcers. They had training departments. They don't nowadays, I don't think, except for the engineering side. They probably do. I'm not so sure. But anyway, in those days, they had training schools. They had a place called Wood Norton in Evesham where the engineers went. As announcers, we had a thing called the pronunciation department and the announcers training department. So we'd go and have training sessions with other announcers who are more senior to me, and a couple of guys who ran the department would run courses. And we would, they would analyze your reading, both your news reading, your conversational continuity reading, and they'd give you, you know, the most amazing feedback. And I certainly benefited from that process. Yeah, no doubt about it. The BBC for those 9 years at Radio 2 was a wonderful experience. And also just watching other people working. And I worked alongside some of the greats, from Terry Wogan to John Peel. You know, I went into the studios where they worked, Ray Moore, John Dunn, you know, Bruno Brooks and Steve Wright.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
All these people, I watched them at close quarters and spoke to them and asked questions. And that in itself was like a university education to me. It was wonderful to see how these masters of the art did it. and I tried to emulate what they did. We all stand on the shoulders of giants at the end of the day.
And that brings me really nicely to a question I wanted to ask you about, specifically about your voice. Now, obviously, because of all the different genres you do, I'm sure you have different ways of doing it. But as you've mentioned, you're probably best known for, you know, let's call it The Voice, the X Factor voice or whatever. Is that a unique voice that you found and stumbled across, and a version of yourself that you engineered, or is that influenced by anyone previously, or how do you come across these different ways of delivering for different genres, I guess?
Well, what I'd say to people is you've got to keep your ears open. Now, be an avid consumer of popular media. So go to the cinema a lot, watch movies, watch TV a lot. Listen to the radio. Listen not just to the radio shows, but listen to the commercials and absorb the cultural mores, the way the zeitgeist has moved, and try and use that information to incorporate into your own read. So you shouldn't really be copying anybody as such. It should be you, but it could be versions of other people in your delivery. But over time, you see, when you become more confident, you find your own voice. And for some people, it's quicker than others. It took me quite a long time to find mine. I was playing the part of a radio announcer. I was adopting a voice, for sure. And so my own voice changed over time. And so I think there's a little bit of everybody in all of us, you know, in terms of how we sound. We are all influenced not only by our parents, but our teachers and our peers. We adopt vocal characteristics of people we like and are influenced by. And I think that's true of everybody. So in terms of the voices I've created, in terms of the character voices I've created, there's a little bit of, for instance, that the character I did for Steve Wright show called Voiceover Man, which was born out of the commercial work I was doing. I'd been listening to these voices in the 80s who were on radio commercials who sounded like this, and they talked with this very, very high prosody, up and down. Yes, that's right. There's a bouncy castle for the kids. Join us Bank Holiday Monday. We're just off the ring road. You know, that kind of very stilted.
That's a real throwback to my childhood there, Peter.
Yeah, it really is. That's right. So that voice then became the voice of this character for Steve Wright show called Voiceover Man. And he spoke like that all the time, even in his private life. You know, he just couldn't. Yes, that's right, Steve. I'm going down to the shops today. And and, you know, he spoke like that was his voice. He couldn't get out of it. And so when the X Factor came along, I thought, well, here's an opportunity to use elements of that voice, you know, that sort of very stylistic voice, but to make it even deeper and more stentorian and more self-important than
what a word
than the usual. I must have eaten a dictionary this morning. What's going on with me? I can see people looking that up as I speak. I'm not sure I even know what it means myself, but it sounds great. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things where you think, yeah, I'm going to take a bit of that voice, a little bit of that person, and I'm going to mix them together, and then you come up with something completely different. So,
yeah.
But then at X Factor, for instance, you know, on Series 1 16 years ago, my voice on that sounded very different to the way it ended up 16 years later, year on year on year on year on, you know. Cowell would say, I want it louder, I want it bigger, and you know, and I'd be, you know, bleeding like a Bond villain from my eyeballs. And then you know, I had to have a towel in the studio just to mop myself down afterwards. It's so these things change over time, they morph, and it's the zeitgeist thing again. Things move, you know, and so nothing ever stays the same, plus ça change.
But I think that's a good example as well in terms of the process, because even putting myself just for 5 seconds there in Simon Cowell's shoes, the X Factor has just got bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a huge Saturday night primetime shiny floor show. Everything is so bombastic. So of course he's going to need every single part of it to level up on tone, and that just makes sense.
Well, the funny thing is, in the early days, nobody gave me any direction. I mean, I just saw this show. I saw the pilot, and I knew this was. I wasn't quite sure. I thought it was. I knew it was half pantomime, half serious. You know, I thought, well, I've got to give it a voice that's got to sound. really big and important to make it sound important, even though it isn't. It's an entertainment show. Over the years, I just thought, I'll push it a bit further. This year, I'm going to do a little bit bigger. And so it got bigger and bigger and more ridiculous and more portentous. And we end up, 16 years later down the line, here we are with this super ridiculous voice, which, has been, I think, would be instantly recognized by 95% of the population if they heard me do it in the street.
Yes. And I should say for our audience, just to kind of pull this round, there's a brilliant, brilliant clip of the comedian Joe Lycett, who does an incredible impression of your X Factor voice. And you and him met by chance, I think, at a Chortle Comedy Awards, and you kind of both do your X Factor voices opposite each other, and it's very, very funny indeed. So check that out on YouTube.
Oh, there are lots of those on YouTube, including Harry Styles and Niall Horan.
Oh, well, I need to check that out. I definitely need to check that out. Peter, the first series of this podcast was about, I interviewed people who'd grown up with famous parents or siblings. So I always like to ask my guests now, how has you being in the public eye to some degree affected your family? What do they think of it?
Well, I think I was to my two sons, who are now grown up in their 20s, I was an embarrassment to them. I think all parents are generally, but even more so when you have famous parents. They didn't have the same kind of embarrassment, as I say, if somebody who was visually known, like an actor or a presenter, or a singer, for instance, where you're on TV a lot visually, you go into school and people have seen your mother or your father on television, or maybe something didn't go quite as well as it should have, or there's been some incident somewhere. The children do get affected by it. But as I said earlier at the start of this interview, I'm not well known visually, so although I have done some TV work, but not enough to make it so that I'm visually recognized. So my kids really grew up, I think, sort of quietly, kind of quite oblivious to the whole thing, although their friends knew what I did. But I think they were more kind of bothered by the fact that I used to wander around the house talking to myself a lot, practicing and trying out new voices. And they got used to it in the end, but I was a bit of they must have thought I was a lunatic.
A schizophrenic father.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would talk to myself. I would have conversations with myself, not realizing they were perhaps listening to me, but I would be having conversations with myself in two different voices and accents. And this is something that we do as voice actors. We have to practice all the time. And until I got my studio in my house, I used to do it in, my study or the living room or the bedroom or wherever. And they'd be quite used to hearing me talking to myself.
Very funny. And that's a vision that I can easily imagine, to be honest, Peter. As my audience will know by now, this series, we kind of changed it a little bit because a lot of the people that I've interviewed before, many of them have talked about the worst thing about being famous or in the public eye is dealing with negative stories from the press or social media. And I mentioned this to you before we came on air, and you've actually said how lucky you are that being a voice artist, you're kind of fortunate not to have to suffer much criticism. But you did tell me a great story about when you worked on the Eurovision Song Contest. So I wonder if you want to go into that a little bit and we can talk a little bit about how that's kind of, I think you mentioned that it kind of helped you.
Yes. I mean, I understand and I get it that most of what's written in the papers, let's face it, is particularly the red tops. It's a lot of it's made up. It's not true. And I do know that for a fact because I've been around famous people and I know them. I know things that are written about them aren't true. So I don't believe everything I read anyway. However, many years ago, this is going back to when I worked in radio, the Eurovision Song Contest, I don't know whether they still do this, but they used to have regional voting juries. So they'd go to all the major BBC regions. I was working in Belfast at the time. So they go to Cardiff, Belfast, Glasgow and London. And there's a jury foreman. And I remember very clearly one year my boss said, would you do this? Would you sit in and give the votes from the Northern Ireland jury? I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. So I was sitting in this studio in Belfast and watching the show go out live on BBC One. Terry Wogan was presenting it. And I watched the jury before me. I think it was the Welsh jury foreman gave the results for each song. And then Terry crossed to me, and I gave my gave the results from our jury. And then whatever happened, something happened to my earpiece. I couldn't quite hear what he said because there was audience noise in the background. The audience was laughing and cheering. And he said something to me, and I maybe misheard what he'd said. And I said something back to him, which was totally irrelevant or inappropriate or nothing to do with what he'd asked me. There was a huge howl of laughter from the audience in London. And then they were off as fast as they had been there. Anyway, the next day in the paper, I just happened to be reading the paper. And there was this review of the Eurovision Song Contest in the paper. And this particular journalist had described me during that broadcast as a plastic injection molded link man.
Right. What does that even mean?
Well, I think what he meant was I was like some sort of, predictable plastic injection molded kind of, same old vanilla thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That was quite stinging, and it was my very first TV appearance, actually. So, it wasn't a great start. Anyway, I was quite young. But since that day, I kind of vowed to myself that whatever I did again, whether it be on TV or on radio, I would never again be that plastic injection molded link man. I would be a lot less predictable and a lot more kind of interesting and less vanilla. And I think that stood me in good stead. So, we could argue that negative press actually had a very positive outcome for me personally, because And I always teach this to other voice artists and voice actors. I say, when you're submitting your demo reel to your agent or to a potential employer, your reel should really sparkle. It should be dangerous in some parts. It should create that what we call the water cooler moment. When they hear it, they'll stop the tape, or they'll stop they don't do tape anymore. They'll stop the MP3 file, and they'll say to their colleague, "Hey, listen to this. You want that reaction rather than yeah, it's okay, it's vanilla. There's hundreds of guys like that." And so, whatever you're doing, whether you're a photographer or an actor or a voice artist or a painter, you want to be less of that plastic injection molded link man. You want to be more vibrant, more dangerous, more unpredictable, more interesting.
No, absolutely. And Peter, if that book that you're releasing next month isn't called Plastic Injection Molded Link Man, then I feel like you've missed a trick.
It's called Voiceover Man, but I have missed a trick.
Plan B was that.
If only I'd spoken to you 3 months ago, Barnaby, we could have sorted that out, but there you go.
And did you, I'm interested, especially with you saying that was your first ever appearance on TV. And I feel like if it had been me, I probably would have buried my head in a duvet for about 3 weeks and vowed never to go on TV again. But you actually managed to straight away find some positivity in it and be like, okay, I'm gonna change. I'm not gonna take that negativity through with me, and I'm going to take positivity from it and actually listen to it and change.
Yes, I mean, it wasn't easy at the time. I mean, I don't deny that. It was a horrible thing to have to happen, being laughed at on national television for being boring or whatever I'd said. I can't remember now, it's so long ago. But I do remember thinking, I did have my head in my hands for a while. I was under a duvet for a few days. In this business, and in fact, in most businesses, you have to develop a certain thick skin, and you have to just get on and learn from every failure. I've always, I've read quite a bit of biographies of successful people, and all of them, bar none, have said that failure has played a huge part in their lives. You cannot have success without failure. I fail every day at things. I'm not great at some things. I'm good at some things, not great at others. But I fail constantly. But the point is, you can't just lie down. You've got to pick yourself up, learn from the mistakes, and keep moving forwards. And it's the moving forwards. It's the what Churchill used to say, KBO, and what he meant by that was keep buggering on. And he was one of the one of the greatest statesmen that ever lived. He didn't have a perfect record by any means. You know, he was responsible for some terrible mistakes during his not just his premiership, but when he was First Lord of the Admiralty. You know, there were disasters. But at the end of the day, in the 40s, when his time came, he was the right man at the right place. He had the right mental fortitude to get this country through what was undoubtedly its darkest period in its history, in its recent history. So I think, not to get too grand about it, I think, you know, just failure is a component of success, and you have to greet it with as not a personal sense of failure, but a sense of learning and how you can move on with it.
Absolutely. And what I got from that, Peter, is that you're saying that you're the next Churchill. So that works out for everybody. just a few quick fire questions, Peter. So first thing that comes to the top of your head, if possible, what's the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you because of being famous / in the public eye?
Most embarrassing thing being, I think once when I was on a train, I was sitting in a compartment and there were three people on the table opposite and they were doing impressions of me. And that was excruciatingly embarrassing because they didn't know I was there.
Of course. What's the best thing about being in the public eye?
Not being in the public eye.
Yeah, I knew you'd say that. And the worst thing about not being in the public eye?
The money. I mean, with fame comes cash. I mean, although I don't do too badly, I think radio certainly has always been the poor relation to television, and certainly those who are out of vision on television are the poor relation to those who appear on camera. But as I said, it's a trade-off. You know, you can earn a lot more money as a face on television, but then you've got to sacrifice some of your liberty and privacy.
Brilliant. And final question, knowing all that it entails and with the benefit of hindsight, would you give up being famous / in the public eye in your version of it if you had the chance? By which I mean, you'd have the same family, you'd have the same finances, you'd have the same life, but your voice would never have been heard on TV or radio, and you would never have had anybody at a party say to you, "You do that, do me the voice."
No, I think I wouldn't give it up. I love the identity that I have. I love the body of work that I've been associated with, the shows I've worked on, and I think all of that really makes me who I am today, and I'm so proud of all of it. There's nothing I regret doing, with the exception of maybe one or two shows which we won't mention, but they never saw the light of day. But I've done everything from circuses to the London 2012 Olympic Games to Brainiac Science Abuse and Guinness World Record shows and Family Fortunes, as you mentioned earlier, to big comedy shows like Live at the Apollo. And you know, it's just been a lovely kind of merry-go-round that goes around every year, and a lot of these shows come back year after year, and it's just so nice to get back into it again.
Peter, thank you so much for coming on. Tell the audience once again when your book comes out.
Okay, it comes out as an audiobook on the 14th of September via spoken word audio. You'll find that on the internet. That's for 2 weeks. And then on the 25th of September, it's out on Audible and also in paperback, in hardback, and also as an ebook. So you can get those from all good retailers, including Amazon.
There you go. Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Almost Famous. Please do press that subscribe button, rate the podcast, and leave us a comment too. And find us on Instagram at Almost Famous the Podcast and on Twitter at Pod Almost Famous. And we'll speak to you. You'll hear from us next time. Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.